Okay, good morning, good vach. Welcome back to the bi-weekly shiur on the Tshuvas of Rav Tzvi Pes HaFrenk, the Har Tzvi. We are thankful to the Litvin family for sponsoring the shiur this morning. We appreciate that sponsorship. And our kolel, the month of learning in the kolel, has generously been sponsored by the Ben Rosh family, Le'il Nishmas Yaakov Kappel, Ben Yechiel Tzvi HaKohen, so we learn Le'il Nishmas as well. And our week of learning the kolel is sponsored by Yitzi and Terry Karasik, close friends of mine, from the other side of the world in Bergenfield, and they sponsor generously. It's awkward, but they sponsored in my honor, so we appreciate their sponsorship as well, and everyone's generous contribution to help the kolel and its Harpat Satora initiative. So we're beginning Mirtz Hashem Bli Nether with an interesting tshuva. You see on the first page you have a tshuva from Rav Tzvi Pes HaFrenk, the Har Tzvi, Simen Kuf Pei and Orach Chaim Chelek Aleph. If you notice, we're not going in any order of topics, obviously, in terms of we keep switching topics every week. But in the Sefer, we're skipping big, big chunks, but we're going in order of Shulchan Aruch. So we started, we started with Hanukkah because that was timely. We moved into Tzitzis, which is early in Shulchan Aruch. Then we moved a little bit later into Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, we spoke of last week, bringing the priest into a shul. Now we're a little bit later, we're in Hilchos Shabbos. Rav Tzvi Pes HaFrenk is well known for his tshuvas about Hilchos Shabbos. There's literally 100 tshuvas about Shabbos in general. We chose just a few out of that, the sampling. A very, very fascinating, interesting topic. The one, disclaimer that I'll make is that until now we've avoided really paskining any shailas. I mean, we're talking about tshuvas, so we're talking about halacha lemaisa in the sense that we're talking about someone who's asked a question and answering practically, but we've avoided the issue of trying to answer questions that anyone here had to deal with necessarily the next day. Unless anyone here, I don't know, I wasn't here, did anyone bring a cross to shul on Shabbos? If you did, then we dealt with that last week, but if you didn't, then you didn't even have that shaila, so then we avoided it entirely. What we're going to talk about today is practical many Shabbosos a year. It comes up all the time, whether it's in your home or whether it's when you're a guest somewhere or whether you're at an event or something, you'll see there are a lot of cases where it can come up. So I'll just give the disclaimer that I'm not here to paskin any shailas. I'm telling you, we're learning together the style of Rav Tzvi Pes HaFrenk, we're learning halachos, we're learning the background to the shaila, but I'm not here to answer any questions for you. And the Rav conveniently left, so I don't have to say, a disclaimer that I'm not passing it in front of him. But if a shaila arises because you hear something today and you realize it impacts your Shabbos last week, this week, or a coming week, then you should for sure ask the shaila to your local Orthodox rabbi. Okay, so if you look in Simen Kuf Pei, Rav Tzvi Pes HaFrenk here in Simen Kuf Pei, again, the second page has Kuf Pei Gimel. Really, everything from Kuf Pei until Kuf Pei Gimel, meaning 180, 181, 182, and 183, are all about this topic of Maisa Shabbos, which we don't know what that means yet. But we picked two that are very, very fundamental, very fascinating, and we'll need a lot of background to get into the tshuva. So it's going to be a lot outside today, not as much reading inside, but a lot of background to understand the shaila. The shaila that he's asked here is as follows, the first shaila on page number one. And we could look at the first paragraph together. Al dvar she'ilastem, regarding your question, im mutter lachem, if it's permissible for you guys, lehishtamish be'or ha'chashmal. What's chashmal? We've spoken before, right? We spoke about electric candles. So, are you allowed to use the electricity b'Shabbos Kodesh? Where do these people live? Where does Rav Tzvi Pes HaFrenk live when he answered this question? In Eretz Yisrael. So what's wrong with using electricity on Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael? The generator, or I shouldn't say generator, because that's really the solution, but the power station, which has the tachana, the power station which has all of the resources from which all of the electricity in the country is benefiting, is drawing from, is being worked in by Jews on Shabbos. And who are they doing it for? They're doing it for the people who live in Eretz Yisrael, which are Jews predominantly. So the chashmal, b'Shabbos Kodesh, can you use the electricity at all? Kevin sha'avodah nasas gam b'Shabbos al yidei Yehudim. The malacha, the work of turning on the electricity, keeping it going, etc., and the power station is done by Jews. Ubishvila Tzibor Yehudi. And it's for the Jewish klal in Eretz Yisrael. So are you allowed to use that electricity on Shabbos? One would think at first glance that the answer is straight in the Gemara in Shulchan Aruch. The Yisrael osa malacha b'Shabbos b'zadon. Aser lo lehanos me osa malacha le'olam. So if a person, a Jew, does a malacha on Shabbos, does one of the 39 malachos on Shabbos and causes some result from that malacha, it is forbidden for that person to benefit from the malacha for the rest of his life. He will never be allowed to use whatever he created through that malacha. V'gam l'shar Yisrael aser lehanos ad motzi Shabbos Kodesh. Let's say I was the one who violated Shabbos, I can't use the item for the rest of my life. Let's say I cooked something on Shabbos, or I lit a fire on Shabbos, I can't use that fire ever. Because why? I can't benefit from the malacha I did. We're not going to let the chote, the one who did the aveira, the violator, gain and benefit from what he did. And even the people around me who didn't do the melacha themselves, they also cannot derive benefit from that, at least until after Shabbos. Now, in order to understand that, we have to look at the Gemara, and we have a chart in the bottom to make it much easier. But before that, this is much, much more important. Every single week, I forgot to mention that on the top of the page, you have a barcode, okay? If you scan that barcode with your camera, you can join our WhatsApp group, which will update you about shiur, and we have opportunities, flyers, schedules, things like that. So you should take advantage of that barcode. We stopped for a short advertisement, okay? I forget every week, and I figured this time I remembered, I might as well cut off the... I think that's what the Gemara calls Bittul Torah or something like that, where you stop in the middle to talk about something else. So hopefully this is Bitula Hikiyuma. This is a way to help for more Talmud Torah in the future because we have a lot of opportunities. So if you scan that barcode or just go to the website, yukolla.com/WhatsApp, you'll be in our group. It's not so bothersome, only a little bothersome. Okay. So that's the Shailer Sviv Hezach Prank is dealing with. We have to talk about first a little bit of background here. So the Gemara in Chulin tells us, that one may not derive benefit from a malacha which was performed by a Jew on Shabbos. That's not exactly what Sviv Hezach Prank told us. There were some details there. Remember, he said that if you did the malacha, you're not allowed to benefit. If someone else didn't do the malacha, are they allowed to benefit from it? When? So there are details here. That's really subject to a three-way machlokas in the Tanayim, quoted in that Gemara in Chulin. You have a chart on the bottom of page number one, which basically tells you all the details over here. There are two factors which we have to start with before we even begin talking about whether something is permissible or not permissible. The first is shogeg, and the second is mezid. Shogeg is a category of doing a malacha on Shabbos in which a person did it unintentionally. So, for example, two possibilities. One, a person knows you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. However, they forget that it's Shabbos and they cook on Saturday. They didn't remember that it was Shabbos and they cooked. They cooked on Shabbos. Bishul b'Shabbos. Is that a malacha? Of course it's a malacha. Are they going to be chayiv misa? They're not going to be chayiv misa. What will they have to do? They do have to bring carbon. They do have to bring a chatas, right? Because anytime you do an aveira that's chayiv kare, so you do it bishogeg, you do it by accident, unintentionally, either because you forgot that it's Shabbos, or let's say you knew it was Shabbos, but you forgot that cooking is usher on Shabbos somehow. So if either of those two scenarios popped up, a person would not be chayiv misa, but they would in fact be chayiv carbon chatas for having done what they did. That is not a great thing. Carbon chatas is because there was some aveira. What aveira? It was an accident. What aveira? So the answer is the Ramban tells us al Torah, a very important yisod, that in every accident lies a little bit of a mezid, a little bit of an intention, or a little bit of a lack of care, a lack of concern. If a person really cared enough about Shabbos, they would know that Bishul is Asar on Shabbos. And if they cared enough about Shabbos, they would know on their calendar, today is Shabbos. And if they forgot that, it is accidental on one level, but on another level, what underlies that accident is a lack of concern for halachos of Shabbos and for the kedusha of Shabbos. So therefore, a person does have to pay some price for that, which is why a person has to offer a karban for having violated Shabbos, even though it was b'shogeg, and that's true about really any iser that's a chiyuv kares. B'shogeg, you have to give that karban chatas. Okay, so you have this category of shogeg, and you have mezid. Mezid means you do something intentionally. You don't like Shabbos. You don't care about Shabbos, so you cook on Shabbos. That's a different act entirely. So what are the halachos? So if you look in the chart over here, it's confusing if you read the Gemara. It's pretty simple with the chart. Rabbi Yochanan assumes that as long as the person did it accidentally, the transgressor may never benefit from the malacha, even though he did it accidentally. So he forgot it was Shabbos, he cooked. He can never eat the chicken that he cooked on Shabbos. Everyone else is allowed to use it, but only after Shabbos. They can't gain benefit from it on Shabbos as on the day itself. If he did it intentionally, then no one can benefit from it ever. That's Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. On the other extreme, Rabbi Meir says that if you did it accidentally, no, you did it accidentally. The whole thing was by accident. It wasn't like the person was lahachis, was trying to be so cruel and intentional in what he was doing. It was a total slip of the mind. So it's permitted for everyone immediately, because we're not going to knasi, we're not going to fine the person for having violated a malacha b'shogeg. We're not going to say he can't eat the food or no one can eat the food. We'll let him have it even on Shabbos itself. If he did it b'mezid, if he really did it intentionally, then on Shabbos no one's allowed to use it. After Shabbos, everyone's allowed to use it. That's Rabbi Meir, he's in the extreme. The middle opinion, which you see highlighted in orange, is Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that if it was done accidentally, then on Shabbos, no one's allowed to use it, but on Matzah Shabbos, everyone's allowed to use it. So if I cooked on Shabbos unintentionally, meaning I forgot it was Shabbos, no one can use that on Shabbos. The transgressor, if he did it on purpose, however, can never gain benefit. Everyone else can still gain benefit after Shabbos. Okay, that's the opinion that Rabbi Yehuda has. Yeah.
For those who are thinking,
do you want this on recording? Okay.
There's interesting opinions about a cholent pot.
Mm.
If it's on a blech,
that's right.
Double blech, if you could stir it, if you could.
That's right. That's right. There are details. There are details. You're right.
And I'm always messing up. My daughter tells me inedible? And then we start discussing, is it inedible just on Shabbos? Right. Is it inedible forever for the whole week?
Right.
And can the dog eat it?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, so it's true. It can come up with details. A person can forget details, and details can also cause Isurim Derabanan might be different than Daraisa, so we'll talk about soon. So that's important. How do we define Shogig? This relates to what you just said. How do we define Shogig? So I gave you one definition. You forget it's Shabbos, or you forget there's a Malacha. But like you said, that's not exactly, you know, hopefully we don't forget it's Shabbos. Hopefully we don't forget that Bishul's a Malacha. When else can something like that come up? And we're talking about Bishul just because it's the easiest case, but it applies to all of the Malachos. So when else can this come up? So the Magen Avraham is a very fascinating idea, which he says, let's say you ask the Rav Ashayla, and the Rav Paskins, yeah, it's mutter to do that. And then you do it on Shabbos, and then you find out after Shabbos, wait, he was wrong. He comes back and says, I made a mistake. It wasn't permissible. So was that did you do it b'mezid? No, you thought it was mutter to do. So same idea, you didn't think it was asr to do this on Shabbos. Turns out you were incorrect, but when you did it, it was b'shogig, it was unintentional. The Magen Avraham says that's a case of shogig. Some interesting marma comes about that as well. Another case which we won't really get into now, we may come back to just to touch on b'lin eder a little bit later, is the question of tinok shenishba. We've heard of the concept of tinok shenishba. Tinok shenishba means a person who is literally, the Gemara's mashal, the metaphor, is a person who was raised by wolves. Meaning, if a person was abducted when he was a child by a pack of wolves and then raised by them, it's not his fault that he doesn't have any etiquette or any way of behaving as a human being. So too, if a person was born into a secular society and had no exposure at all to Judaism, so that person is considered a tinok shenishba. That has certain ramifications of the halacha. The Chaznish most famously said that there's no hatred or disdain for such a person when they do Isurim, even though we're supposed to hate Isurim in general. We're supposed to have disdain for Isurim, not for people, but for Isurim that they do, that may not apply, and the halachos therein don't apply by a tinok shenishba, because what's he supposed to do? He doesn't know any better. So does that make him a shogig on Shabbos is a very, very complicated question, not pashut at all, but worth raising. Yeah?
Just a quick question. Is there
I only called on you because you sponsored the breakfast, you know that. Otherwise, like, I want to go on here, but we'll let you go. if you do schnapps for breakfast, then you'll get two next time.
Is there a time limit for a shogig?
Meaning?
Example, next that much Shabbos, I should say. Much Shabbos.
Oh.
What if 6 months later? Is there a 2 to 6 years later? Is there
excellent.
A time for shogeg?
Meaning until when you could benefit
until
from
then,
it?
Yeah.
We'll get to it. We neither will get to it. Yeah. 6 months would be extreme in most cases, but.
The chicken would spoil.
What? The chicken would spoil. The chicken would spoil, that's for sure. That's for sure.
In the carbon. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, there's no timeline on that.
There's no timeline?
In terms of giving the carbon?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no timeline on that. That's why the Gemara.
Later, you found out something that
right, know. Right, and you know it's fascinating. So the Gemara says in at least one place I can think of, but probably other places as well, that there were instances where we find that some of the Tanayim made accidental mistakes on Shabbos. You find the Gemara in Shabbos that says that who was it? Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol I forgot who it was. But you know, there's a Gezeira Derabanan that a person shouldn't read next to a lamp on Shabbos. Why?
Shemayata,
exactly. You might go ahead and tip the lamp in order to make it burn a little bit brighter. We don't relate to this because we don't use candles, but we have some similar situations the post can talk about. Maybe a candle that has a dimmer, that has a dimmer, and you could raise the volume. What would you call that? The intensity of the light. Fine, but that may or may not apply. Either way, so Shemayata, like you said, Shemayata, you might tip the lamp in order to make it burn brighter. What if you tip the lamp and make it burn brighter? That's an Isur Daraisa on Shabbos, right? You're mamish doing Havara on Shabbos. You're lighting something on Shabbos. So I forgot who it was. One of the Tanayim, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, maybe. So he said, yeah, but I'm a Talmud Chacham. I know the Halacha. I know why the Rabbanan made the Gzeira. So I'll sit by the lamp and learn Torah, and I won't do it. And what did he do? He tipped the lamp. So I think in that Gemara, it says that he wrote down to himself, he made a note that Shem Yivana Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash comes, I have to offer Achatas. Years later. So this is a discussion. The Chasam Sofer writes about this, I think, whether we're supposed to be doing this, keeping track of like all the Yisurim we do in order. That's why I have this this notebook here. It's my fifth one. Okay. So whether you have to keep track or not is an interesting question. Yeah. Another case that comes up, the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa talks about this. You have to know there's a distinction between two categories, Misasik and Shogeg. We don't have time to really get into Misasik right now, but the term Misasik means that a person didn't do something unintentionally, accidentally, but it's an even lower level. Totally absent-mindedly. They didn't realize, not only it wasn't Shabbos, they didn't realize what they were doing at all. There are different examples that the Tosfos and Shabbos and Maseches Shabbos on Ayin Beis talk about, plucking a carrot out of the ground, two interesting cases. But basically the case that I think is most applicable to us is the following. You ever have this? You wake up in the morning, Shabbos morning, you go into the bathroom, you brush your teeth or don't brush your teeth, whatever, and you leave the bathroom, what do you do? You shut the light. Or when you're going in, hey, you turn on the light because it wasn't on. I don't know, whatever. So was it that it was Shabbos, but you forgot it was Shabbos, so you turn the light? No. Was it that you knew it was Shabbos, but you forgot turning on lights as usher? No. What was it?
Habit.
Nothing. Habit. By rote. That's what I do. When I walk into the bathroom, I turn my hand and I flip on the switch. Even when it doesn't happen to you, it almost happens to everyone all the time, right? You have to stop yourself sometimes from certain habits. So is that considered an amaisa b'shogeg? So the halacha assumes, the Shmir Shabbos Chasa says, the halacha assumes, that's different. That's misasik. That's misasik. So in that case, if it's misasik, so you don't assume that that Maisa Shabbos applies, because that wasn't even a Maisa. Misasik is not even a Maisa. This is a discussion the postman Rabbi Akiva Eger and the Nesivos have machlokes about this. But maybe when you do something by misasik, that's not even considered a Maisa at all. And maybe that should be considered a misasik, absent-minded, it's not even action in the first place. Some of the poskim say that no, if you instinctively turn on lights, you can't call that an absent-minded non-action. I'll give you an example of misasik, they say. This is the Mishnah Halacha says this. I think the Shemir Shabbos Chazal quotes this, but it might be someone else who quotes it. The Orchel Shabbos quotes this. The Orchel Shabbos quotes the Mishnah Halacha, the Menashe Klein, like this. Let's say you didn't absent-mindedly turn it on. You didn't forget it was Shabbos. What did you do? You backed up into the wall, and there was a light switch there, and you didn't realize. That is obviously misasik. Can you benefit from the light on Shabbos? Yeah, that wasn't an action at all. But if you instinctively turned on the lights on Shabbos, you did do the action. Okay, you weren't paying attention to what you're doing, but you did do the action. So that's considered a Maisa Shabbos, according to the Mishnah Halachos, and therefore you would have to question, you know, the halachos of shogeg and benefiting from that malacha after Shabbos. I was going through once, just because I had bought it recently, the Shabbos Tshuva's Eretz Tzvi of the Kasher Glover Gaon. He assumed Davar Pashut, very simple, the way I said originally, that it's not called an action at all if you do it instinctively without paying attention. He's not talking about our case, but he assumed that. So that's something that's worth asking a question about that the post can do debate. Okay. Either way, there's a major machlokas we've shown him here. Again, we had a three-way machlokas tonight in your chart over here about what the halacha is in a case where the action was done on Shabbos. So how do we paskin? So if you look, it's highlighted in orange. We paskin in Shulchan Aruch in the beginning of Siman Shin Yud Ches and Aruch Chaim. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like Rabbi Yehuda, the middle opinion, that if the malacha was done on purpose, then a person that did the malacha can never benefit from the malacha ever again. If the malacha was done bishogeg, and everyone else around them can't benefit until after Shabbos. If the malacha was done bishogeg, so then on Shabbos, everyone else is allowed to use it. But on Matzei Shabbos, I'm sorry, on Shabbos, no one's allowed to use it. On Matzei Shabbos, everyone's allowed to use it. So that's a good question. We'll have to deal with that. Each malacha is going to be something you have to deal with, whether it's considered active hana or not active hana. You have to figure out in each case. So just to give, we'll give an example. We keep talking about bishul, so we'll just give one example to solidify what we're talking about. Let's say you come home Shabbos morning and you see your spouse, your child, your parent, whatever. You see someone in the kitchen cooking chicken in the oven. Do you cook chicken in the oven? Are you cooking on a stove? How do you cook chicken? Oven. So you see chicken in the oven. As you can tell, this has never happened to me. So you see someone who put chicken in the oven. You say, what are you doing? Give out kishrigan, it's Shabbos. So imagine the person says, oh, I totally forgot it's Shabbos. I totally forgot it's Shabbos, right. I totally forgot it's Shabbos. So what would the halacha be? So the Shulchan Aruch would say, neither of you can eat the chicken that day because it was a malacha that was done by Shogig, but both of you can eat it on Matzei Shabbos, correct? That's what it would seem from Shulchan Aruch, very simple. Let's say you get in and you say, I give out kishrigan, it's Shabbos, what are you doing with the chicken in the oven? They say, you know what? Davening is so long. I'm sick of the Shabbos thing. I mean, I went to shul and now I'm done with it. I can't. And they're taking off the yarmulke and they're putting the chicken in the oven. So then who's allowed to eat the chicken? Nobody's allowed to eat it that day. The person who put it in the oven can never eat it ever, and the person who's watching can, in fact, eat it after Shabbos. That would be the halacha.
He doesn't really care.
Who? Maybe he does tshuva after Shabbos. That's the hope. Yeah, so famously, the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Vilna Gaon, who disagrees with the Shulchan Aruch entirely. If you look back at our chart, the Rebbe Meir assumed that as long as something done b'shogeg, you can use it immediately. And if it was done intentionally, then it's not allowed on Shabbos, but on Matzah Shabbos, everyone's allowed to use it, meaning it's not even us or for the person who did it. They will only go on paskins like that, against the Shulchan Aruch. They go and assume like Rav Meir. And according to the Mishnah Berurah, we're allowed to rely on the Vilna Gaon in three cases, three basic exceptional cases. Generally speaking, of course, paskins like the Shulchan Aruch, but in at least three cases, we're allowed to assume like the Vilna Gaon. In a Makom Tzorech, let's say the cholent case, you know, let's say you really did mess up, and it was a shogeg, it was an accident, and the cholent really was cooked on Shabbos. But you don't have any other food. There's no other food, and there's no way to get food. So in a makom tzorach, again, what's a makom tzorach? What's considered tzorach? Is shalom bayis considered tzorach? Is the fact that you want to prove your daughter wrong a tzorach? Maybe. In some families, maybe. So that's a question that you have to ask a posik. What's considered tzorach? But once it is deemed to be a necessity that you need this food, then we could be makel, says the Mishnah Berurah, like the Shulchan Aruch, like the Vilna Gaon rather, that if it was done accidentally, it can be utilized even on Shabbos itself. The Vilna Gaon is also allowed to be relied upon, says the Mishnah Berurah, in a case of an Isser Darabanan. If the Isser was only a Darabanan in the first place, it wasn't really cooking, but it was, let's say, Hachzara or Shehiya, Darabanan style parts of cooking, so that would be permissible to rely on the Vilna Gaon. In those cases, Bishogig, you'd be allowed to use it, everyone would be allowed to use it on Shabbos itself. Lastly, most interestingly, and really, really debatable when this should apply, the Mishnah Berurah assumes that we could rely on the Vilna Gaon in a case where there's a machlokas. Meaning, let's say you did something on Shabbos, and it's a machlokas between, well, we'll use the same example, you and your daughter, whether that's permissible or whether that's forbidden. So the Vilna Gaon would obviously be mekel because you did a bishogeg, but the Shulchan Aruch, according to the Mishnah Berurah, we could be mekel even if we hold like the Shulchan Aruch, as long as there's a machlokas, a debate about whether it's permissible or not. What's considered a debate? You and your daughter is really considered a debate? Or no, it has to be between two poskim. Or no, it has to be two poskim who have big beards. Or no, it has to be two poskim who are on the page of Shulchan Aruch. That's a big question. That's a big question. That's why I grew a beard, so that hopefully one day people will be able to quote me in these inyanim. But that's a question which, you know, level of posik you need to be able to rely on in terms of machlokas, but as long as there is a legitimate machlokas, the Mishnah Berurah assumes we can't be mekel if it was a case of shogeg. Let's come back to our case that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was talking about now that we have some background. This case is a case of mezid or shogeg. Remember what's happening? We're in a power station. The Jews are working there on Shabbos, and they're lighting up on Shabbos. The lighting up on Shabbos is a different connotations. It's mezid. Anyone have any reason to say it might not be mezid?
They don't know it's Shabbos.
Is that true? Jews in Israel don't know it's Shabbos?
Oh.
They know it's Shabbos. They know it's Shabbos. Well, what? Everyone knows it's Shabbos in Israel. Okay, so we all assume it's mezid. One could have argued, again, we don't know what the halacha is here yet. One could have argued it's that funny case of tinok shenishba. You do have a lot of chilul in it. Why are you making a face? Why wouldn't it be?
Because everybody knows.
It's Shabbos. Yeah, that's what the poskim talk about. They weren't raised with Shabbos. It's a different type of case, right? That's all you're pointing out. You don't have to know the halacha yet. It's a different type of case. They know it's Shabbos. They were taught not to keep Shabbos. Is that still called Tinok Shenishba? The case we're familiar with is a secular Jew raised in America, has no exposure to Judaism, raised by non-from parents for generations. They were American for generations. So the person doesn't know. If they were exposed, maybe they'd do tshuva. Maybe they would come back. If they weren't exposed, they would never know they're supposed to come back. They may even have heard of a concept of Shabbos, but it doesn't register. If you're a Jew raised in Eretz Yisrael, and you know Tanakh back and forth, and you were raised to smoke on Shabbos, it's hard to say it's the same category of Tinok Shenishba. Maybe you could, but it is hard to argue, and that's, I think, an excellent point. So we'll assume it's mezid here. If it's mezid, what's the problem? Who's allowed to benefit from this? The person who did it, never. And all of us who are the, not the ones who did it, but are trying to benefit from it, we wouldn't be allowed to benefit until? At least after Shabbos. After Shabbos, exactly. So, one other detail that we have to discuss very briefly is the following. And the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank quotes this again. We're doing it outside, but it is quoted inside here. He quotes the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham asks the following question. What if Reuven made the transgression? He's the one who lit the lights. He's the one who cooked the chicken. But he did so for Shimon. Meaning, you walk home on Shabbos morning, you get in the room, and the person says, oh, I made us some chicken for lunch. Whatever, and they say is because shul was too long, so they're going off the derech. It's happened. So they say that, fine. And then they say, and I made it for you. I made it so that we could enjoy it together for lunch. So who is allowed to use this chicken now or not allowed to use this chicken now? The person who did it is for sure out of the question, right? He can never use the chicken again. Okay. What about the person he cooked it for? So on the one hand, I didn't do the melacha. I'm not the violator. I'm not the transgressor. So why should I be forbidden to use the chicken? But on the other hand, he did it for me. So maybe if he did it for me, that's worse. Maybe I'm not allowed to derive benefit because it was done for my benefit, for me. So maybe that knas, the fine, should apply. So the Magen Avraham assumes, no, it only applies to the transgressor. You don't have to worry about the fact that he did it for you. But the Magen Avraham struggles with this for a little bit, and the reason is the following. The Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeya, in Simen Sadi Test, the Shulchan Aruch has a rule of Ein Mevatlin Isur L'Chatchila, which means as follows. We know the halacha is that we have a concept of bittel. Bittel means nullification, which means that if I have a chulent, and while I'm making the chulent, my son, me making chulent part doesn't happen. My son throwing things in the kitchen happens all the time. My son throws a ball in the kitchen. Which one? The answer is yes. So he throws a ball in the kitchen. It hits the stack of cheese. A piece of cheese jumps up into the air and lands in the chulent. Okay. So now if there's a lot of cheese in the chulent, it could trafe up the chulent. But let's say it's just the tiniest amount of cheese, a tiny, tiny piece of cheese, a speck, and there's more than 60 times, 61 times the amount of cheese, there's cholent. So that's a batel. We assume that that cholent is edible, and it's fine. Okay, that's a concept of bittel. Says the Mechaber, but even so, ein mevatlan iser lechatchila. You're not allowed to do this lechatchila, meaning intentionally, meaning you can't set up a situation in which you can't... as opposed to where my son threw the ball and hit the cheese and it went into the cholent, I can't take cheese every week and put it into the cholent knowing it's going to be less than a 60th just because I want to make it a little thicker or add a little bit. I can't do that every single week. I can't do that ever on purpose. Why not? Ein mevatlan iser lechatchila. If it happens, you can partake of it, but you may not do so lechatchila intentionally. There are some interesting cases that come up, by the way. We don't have time to talk about it now. But you know those, this is I think the most interesting and relevant case. You know those coffee creamers that, not those, the Coffee Mate. So they're non-dairy.
The individual ones?
Either one. They are dairy officially. I mean, they're OUD, but I'm saying they don't have, so you know the power of ones, right. So they often, they're OUD, but there's the tiniest amount of milk. Tiny. It's supposed to be, I think for lactose intolerant people, like it's supposed to help people who have who don't want to have dairy, but it has the tiniest amount of casein or milk, whatever, in the ingredients. So in that case, if you poured in even a shot or you know a little bit of that into your coffee, the amount of dairy product in there is so minuscule that it would probably be, we can't know for sure because I think they don't have to disclose ingredients under a certain percentage, so we don't know exactly the percentages, but some tiny percentage, it would be buckle in the coffee. So let's say, now let's go a little further. Let's say you had Shabbos lunch, and now you want to have a coffee afterwards, and you want to have milk in your coffee. You can't have milk because you're fleishig. You don't have power of milk, but you have this creamer. So are you allowed to pour in this creamer, knowing it's not really going to be a dairy milk coffee after I pour it in? So is that ein mevatlan lechatchila? So everyone jumped to ein mevatlan lechatchila. Not so simple. Might be permissible. Might be permissible. Not for now. Sorry, guys. Okay. So the Magen Avraham says, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, so the Shulchan Aruch says, Ein mevatel nisa lechatchila, and then the Shulchan Aruch adds an interesting detail, which is the following. Ein mevatel nisa lechatchila means that if I pour the milk into the cholent, that is not permissible to them partake of, because Ein mevatel nisa lechatchila, I can't do that intentionally in advance, knowing knowledgeable that I'm fully intending to be mevatel iser. And if I did it for my roommates, and I did it for everyone who lives in the house, or I did it for everyone who's coming to my store, maybe, that's the Rabbi Ki Baker throws in there, maybe if I do it in our store for everyone who's coming in as a customer, it's usher for all of them as well. Because in that case, it's ein mevatel nisa lechatchila on the person's partaking of it also. Because the situation was one in which you were mevatel nisa lechatchila. The situation is one in which you were purposely nullifying this milk into the cholent. And now anyone who is made for and then partakes of it is going to be violating that issue. And therefore, that's considered ein mevatel nisa lechatchila. That's what Rabbi Kiva Eger says is applies to customers. But the Shulchan Aruch himself says applies in general. So the Magen Avraham says maybe the same is true here. I'm not allowed to benefit from a malach I did on Shabbos forever. And maybe everyone I did it for also can't benefit from it. Why? Because I did it for them too. So they're also direct beneficiaries of this malacha, and therefore they should have the same issue of not benefiting from it, not only until after Shabbos, but forever. That's what the Magen Avraham suggests. Now the Magen Avraham hems and haws a little bit, and he points out that the Beis Yosef himself was makel on this. The Beis Yosef was the same author as the Shulchan Aruch. The Beis Yosef backs out of this, and therefore the Magen Avraham seems to end up being lenient. It's not 100% clear the Magen Avraham is lenient, but the Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank does quote him that way, and most of the poskim assume that the Magen Avraham is lenient, and therefore we assume that it's only the person who directly did the malacha himself who cannot benefit forever, but if you are just the guest at the house, or you're the spouse, or whatever it might be, you would be someone else in the house that would be allowed to benefit. However, there is one major difference. The major difference is what the poskim, later poskim, the Maharsham, the Kaf HaChaim, others point out, which is that we have a concept of a smuchim al shulchano, b'nei beso smuchim al shulchano, meaning that if I have a cholent that I cooked on Shabbos, so I cannot benefit forever, and the people who come to my house as guests can't benefit on Shabbos, they can only eat it after Shabbos, but I can't even eat it after Shabbos. Let's say they come over from Lav Malka, so I have guests who come over, and I had in mind, I'm going to cook a cholent for them on Shabbos. So, Nebuch, I'm a Shegetz, but they're letting my cholent after Shabbos, fine. You have to deal with other questions. Maybe if I'm not keeping Shabbos, am I keeping kosher? I don't know. That's a big question you have to ask. But let's just say I did that so they could partake of it after Shabbos. Fine, they can take it out of Shabbos. I had in mind for them to benefit from it, but what do we say? That's not counting as them doing it. I did it myself, they didn't do it themselves, so it's not going to be a problem. Fine. But what about the following case? The guests come over from Lav Malka, and then my kids come out of the room and say, we also want some of the cholent. So I made the cholent. My kids didn't make the cholent. So I can't partake of it. The guests can. What about my children? So on the one hand, they didn't make it either. But on the other hand, it's a higher level of being made for them, no? That's what the poskim say. It's not, they're not just guests who are coming over and randomly eating. That's who you, that when you make shalom, you make it for you, your wife, your children. It's for everyone in the house. B'nei beiso hasmulcham al shulchano, the people who eat by your table, who literally rely on you to sustain them. Those people may be considered within the category of the person who did it themselves. And therefore, if it's the children, the spouse, someone who is really, you know, set in terms of being made for them, that would be an issue. The Shmir Shabbos Kachasa quotes this, la halacha. That would be an issue for them to partake of the food, even after Shabbos in such a case. Yeah. The next thing we really have to deal with is when the food, the electricity, whichever case we might be talking about, becomes permissible. Sifas HaFrank talks about the issue of Matzei Shabbos. Now, at this point, we're going to transfer to the next tshuva, but what Sifas HaFrank points out is that what we're about to discuss is not really relevant by the electricity case. We'll try to explain it in a second. There's a machlokas in the Rishonim as to at what point on Matzei Shabbos this food becomes permissible. Until now, we basically said you can't eat the food on Shabbos, but you can eat it after Shabbos, correct? Right after Shabbos? So that's what we've been assuming until now. Right after Shabbos, you can go ahead and eat it. That's a little bit of machlokas. The Rambam says what we just said, which means right after Shabbos, you can break out that chulent that was cooked on Shabbos accidentally or on purpose, even for everyone else, and you can eat it. However, Rashi argues and says you have to wait until after Shabbos until when? Anyone know? Oh, excellent. In Hebrew, it's called Bechtesha Yeyasa or Bechtesha Yaasa. Grammatically, I think it can go either way. I'm not sure which one the Rishonim intended. Is it Bechtesha Yaasa until the person can do it, or Bechtesha Yeyasa until it can be done? I don't know which one it would be. Either one means the same thing in our case, right? So let's say I cooked a hot dog on Shabbos. How long does it take to cook a hot dog? 5 minutes. Okay, 5 minutes.
Hot dog's already cooked.
Yeah, someone told me that. I haven't tried that yet. But yeah, so let's say I cooked chicken on Shabbos. How long does it take to cook chicken?
An hour.
An hour, okay. So can I eat the chicken right after Shabbos? The Rambam says yes. Rashi says, no, you got to wait an hour after Shabbos. Why? That's how long it takes to make, exactly. What's the logic? What's the line of reasoning for that? Why does it make sense that only if you waited until after Shabbos, a whole hour, as long as it took to do on Shabbos, can you partake of the food? Why does that make sense to you?
No.
What?
No.
Exactly. If I eat the food right after Shabbos, then I benefited from the fact that it was made on Shabbos, because I got it right after Shabbos, a fresh piece of chicken. If I wait a full hour after Shabbos, then at this point, who cares when it was made? If it was made on Shabbos, I would have had to wait anyways until after Shabbos to eat it. So therefore, you have this gezerah of bichdei sheyaseh or bichdei sheyaseh, and this machlokas is quoted by the Beis Yosef. The Shulchan Aruch passing like the Rambam, that we're allowed to partake of this food immediately after Shabbos, we do not have to wait. Why don't we assume like Rashi? So for the following reason, where do we have this halacha other than a Jew doing malacha on Shabbos? That should have given it away.
After Pesach, you have to
interesting. Not what I was thinking of, but in Hilchos Shabbos.
Oh, Shabbos.
Things being delivered to the house.
Also very interesting, but who usually delivers those things? That'll help us get the answer.
Non-Jews.
So we know there's an Isser of Amir La'akum on Shabbos. They're not allowed to tell a non-Jew to do a malacha for you on Shabbos. Let's say a non-Jew does a malacha for you on Shabbos. You asked them, you didn't ask them, whatever. Let's say they did you a malacha on Shabbos. Are you allowed to derive benefit from it on Shabbos? The answer is no, you're not allowed to derive benefit from Shabbos, which comes up. I forgot who it was that asked before already, but you know, someone turns on the lights in the room. Do you have to leave the room? Yep. Well, yep. Again, these things become complicated in terms of whether you ask them to or not. Ask them to, but yeah, exactly. So we assume that once a non-Jew does malach for you on Shabbos, you cannot benefit from it on Shabbos until after Shabbos. Bechtei sheyaseh. Why? Because of the following concern. Listen closely and try to apply to our case. The following concern. We are worried that what's going to happen? This week, the non-Jew does a favor for you and he cooks you a chicken on Shabbos. Let's say you didn't even ask him. But let's say you eat it right away, you get tremendous benefit from it. What are you going to do next week?
Hire.
Yeah, you might ask him to do it again. Or you might hint him he'll do it again. But either way, you guys are going to start to have a deal here. I know that I'm going to gain a tremendous amount of benefit. So what we want to do is we want to push you away as far as possible from getting any benefit from a malacha non-Jew did for you on Shabbos. And therefore we say that after Shabbos, you have to wait that hour so that you don't gain any benefit whatsoever, no hana, from the Maisa Shabbos that this guy did for you. You don't get any pleasure from him having done it. This way you won't ask him next week, and the Akam won't do it for you next week. Those are two parts, by the way. The fact that we want to dissuade you from asking him, and the fact that we want to dissuade him from listening to you. It's important. We'll see soon why there's two different things. So therefore, we have to wait until after Shabbos, Bichdei Sheyaseh, until the Malacha can be done. Does that apply to a Jew doing Malacha? That's a Machlokas Rashi and the Rambam, and we saw the Shulchan Aruch says it does not apply. It does not apply. Why not? Why doesn't it apply to a Jew? And therefore? But you're allowed to...
You don't need to necessarily create as big a...
Why? Because? You won't ask him next week. Exactly. You won't ask him next week. And if you do ask him, he won't do it. He won't do it. In most cases. In most cases. In most cases. We'll have to talk about the other cases soon. But in most cases, exactly. Matt, at some point, people online were asking me if you're going to start giving the shiur at some point. They said they hear you're getting all the right answers every time. So that's the what the post can point out over the Tazmag and Avram. Basically, the post can say those are the explanations, and therefore, it may or may not apply to a Jew, Rashi and the Rambam, of Bechdesh Yaseh after Shabbos. Even if it does apply to a Jew, and we'll talk about a case where it might, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and this is with this, we'll flip the page, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says by electricity, there's no issue of Bechdesh Yaseh after Shabbos. Why? Well, it's instantaneous, exactly. He says when you flip on a switch, electricity goes on. So let's say a Jew, lit the electricity for you on Shabbos. So now you don't want to benefit from it. Okay, you can't even benefit after Shabbos until Bechdesh Yaseh, until the amount of time it takes for him to generate the electricity. Okay, how long does it take to generate electricity?
Well, what is it?
A split second.
Generating in a power plant? Or are you talking
about the
fact that it's there? And it's
what the person does. Yeah. We don't care. Yeah. They took hundreds of years to develop electricity.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying that you have a generator.
For sure. Power plant. Right. A power plant. How long does it take for that guy to flip a switch? The lights go on in your house? Less than a second. Instantaneous. So, good. You waited. It's not applicable. Okay. What's very interesting in this, he talks about in Siman Kuf Pei, but again in Siman Kuf Pei Gimel on the second page over here, where Tzvi Pesach Frank has, once we even clear that hurdle of Bechdesh Yaseh and not Bechdesh Yaseh, there's two factors we still have to talk about. There's a famous Prima Gadim. Prima Gadim has a suffix about a case in which a mumar lechal Shabbos, a non-observant Jew who regularly breaks Shabbos, doesn't care for Shmiras Shabbos whatsoever, so such a person does a malacha for his own benefit on Shabbos. Imagine, a person who always breaks Shabbos cooks a chicken, but he cooks it for himself. So can you benefit immediately after Shabbos from that malacha or not? So generally, let's just apply our rules. Someone does a malacha b'mezid intentionally on Shabbos. Is he allowed to gain benefit on Shabbos?
No.
Is he allowed to gain a benefit ever? No. Okay, let's go to the next person. Me. Can I gain benefit on Shabbos? No. Can I gain benefit ever?
Yes.
When? Right after Shabbos. In this case, let's say I gain benefit right after Shabbos. And it was good chicken. It tasted very good. What might I do next week? Okay, so maybe you wouldn't ask him because you know he's Jewish. But let's say he knows he did you a good favor and he knows you liked it. What might he do? He might do it again. Oh, he's Jewish. It's true. So the gzera shouldn't apply. But on the other hand, maybe in this case the gzera does apply. Because in this case, he's a mumer, lechal Shabbos. This is what he does. He cooks on Shabbos. So he knows you're going to enjoy it. You may even ask him, but even if you won't ask him, he may come to do it for you. And perhaps that issue of Bechdesh Yaseh kicks in on Matzei Shabbos, even by a Jew, in a case where they're a non-observant Jew. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that really fascinating? So the Prima Gadim leaves this as a suffix. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank quotes all this. The post can talk about this a lot. He leaves it as a suffix. There's another really case where it can come up as well, which is in restaurants, more in Eretz Yisrael, a hotel in Eretz Yisrael, where you have Jews cooking in the kitchen on Shabbos, and you're eating from it, Matzah Shabbos, from Lav Malka, or even if you get served a meal on Shabbos, and you don't know what's going on in the kitchen, and there's Jews cooking on Shabbos. So there could be serious situations like that come up. The other factor that's thrown in there, it's a famous Ksav Sofer about this, and Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank quotes the Ksav Sofer as well, but what gets thrown in there is that this goes above and beyond Matzah Shabbos. Whether or not you're allowed to benefit after Shabbos or never, the Ksav Sofer says, how could you benefit from a business of Chilul Shabbos? If they're every Shabbos, week in, week out, they're cooking on Shabbos and serving it and making money on it, how could you support such a business? If you support that business, it's Lifnei Iver, it's encouraging, empowering, it's helping them, it's allowing them to keep violating Shabbos and to stay in business through Chilul Shabbos. So even if you, quote-unquote, forgot about the halacha of Maisa Shabbos entirely, you forgot about the fact that you're not allowed to gain benefit from halacha done on Shabbos, how could you support such an enterprise? Now, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has a very fascinating line here, where he says about both of these fakos, he says it's not so simple to just be machmir, to be stringent. Because we have a svara, a logic to say some gezerah should apply, was there ever a gezerah made, an enactment against Jews who cook on Shabbos, they have to wait till Bechdesh Yaseh after Shabbos? No. We thought of a case where it should apply because he's a non-observant Jew. He'll do it again for you next week. And maybe therefore the concept of Bechdesh Yaseh should apply to him as well. But did Chazal say that in the Gemara? No. So that's a question. When you have a gezerah that only applies to certain people, and then later in history you find a way to apply it to more people, does that gezerah now expand to apply to those people as well? Or do we say we only have what Chazal told us? That's a major, major discussion. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank says he writes about this elsewhere, but he says you have to think carefully before you start adding on a gzerier. Not so simple that we have to be machmir. Again, we can throw on top of all this, we'll throw in the question from before of Tinok Shenishba, which we weren't sure about. Mrs. Schreiber had an argument against this. But potentially you could say a Tinok Shenishba is a shogeg. They don't know what Shabbos, they don't know about Shabbos, so therefore when they cook in the kitchen, when they have this restaurant, whatever, they're not considered like they're doing something intentionally. But the pushback is, of course, they're considered intentional. They know what Shabbos is, they were just taught to violate it. That's still considered Chilul Shabbos. This is most are machmir on this. The Orchel Shabbos encourage is asking a question, maybe if you have enough factors to put together, maybe you can come up with a kula, but that's not something we rely on without a lot of other factors included. Okay. Unfortunately, this machlokas that we're dealing with is very relevant every single week. Many, I don't know, Israeli news sites or TV programs, things like that, they run straight through Shabbos. So you have Jews working straight through Shabbos to produce, to create news programming, whatever. Aside from the fact that, given time differences, you can kind of watch something going on in Eretz Yisrael on Erev Shabbos when it's Shabbos there. On this side of the world, right? On Erev Shabbos, on Shabbos there. Besides for that, even on Matzei Shabbos, you might be benefiting from something that was done on Shabbos, correct? So this question is really relevant, everything we've discussed until now. The Ksav Sofer would certainly be machmir. How could you support an Israeli news program that's creating content on Shabbos, and you're giving them the business of watching their show and benefiting from them on Erev? Forget about the halachas of Shabbos. How could you do the lifnei iver of supporting such an enterprise? Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank might be machmir on Bechdei Shiaseh, that's Safek of the Prima Gadim, meaning since they're all mumrim, since they're all non-observant, and therefore they're violating consistently Shabbos, maybe you can't benefit from it until it's the time that it takes to produce such a thing after Shabbos, which would mean until basically the next day, probably in most cases. So he might be machmir there, and some are machmir on that on the situation. But another consideration to add Lakula is something that Tzvi Pesach Frank talks about in this tshuva in Simen Kuf Pei Gimel, which is the following. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us that we have a concept of Me'ilah. I have a feeling that a few weeks ago, maybe it was even last week, I just don't remember, we spoke about the concept of benefiting from, anyone remember this? We spoke about the concept of benefiting from kol ma'ariv ereach, benefiting from sound or sight or smell. And we discussed that maybe such a benefit's not considered a real benefit. And I may even have promised, nobody here listens to anything, right? I may even have promised to talk about it one day, so here we are. But the Gemara in Pesachim tells us that there's an Isser of Me'ilah, we know, which means that if there's something which is hek, there's something which is Kodesh, which is sanctified in the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to benefit from it. You're not allowed to use it for your own mundane use.
That's why we are forbidden, I asked, to go into a church. Because we can't.
Oh, right, we're talking the Vatican. Right. Very good. So it was last week. 2 weeks ago. Very good. So here I am, fulfilling my promise. Look at that. I think I said B'li Nether, but if I didn't, then I'm being Mekayim that. So we had a Gemara in Pesachim which says that to see something or to smell something or to hear something, that's not considered a me'ila. That's not considered deriving benefit. Why? Why not?
Doesn't last.
Not tangible. Doesn't last is an interesting point, and that actually is related in a little bit of a different context. But we'll talk. This is more easy to say. It's not tangible. Meaning, if I eat something, I taste something. There's something very tangible to that hana. If I smear oil on my skin, I feel the difference. If I hear something or smell something or see something, it's elusive, not in the sense of escaping in time, but escaping in terms of tangible. It's not something you can really grasp. And therefore, that's not considered a hana halachically when it comes to me'ila. What about by Shabbos? So let's say someone cooks something for you on Shabbos and you eat it. That's hana, benefiting from Isa Shabbos, correct? Good. Let's say someone produces a TV show for you and now you're watching the TV show. Let's say the case that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank is talking about, in Mutter Lishma B'Shabbos Kodesh, radio, Shehud Lak Ayidei Yisrael Mumar. Let's say a Jew who's non-observant turns on the radio for you. You want to hear what happened in the... What are the local teams? Whatever. I'll talk about the Dodgers. Okay, Brooklyn, the Dodgers. Good. So let's say the Dodgers are playing, the Jew who doesn't care about Shabbos turns on the TV, turns on the radio, so that you could see what's going on or hear what's going on the in the game at that point on Shabbos. So is that considered hana? Is that gaining benefit from the malacha he did?
Depends on the playoffs.
Okay. No. So what might be? So you might argue that, what do you mean? You're watching the show. You're gaining benefit on Shabbos from something that was done by a Jew on Shabbos. Or even after Shabbos, if he's a mumar, as we spoke about before. The other possibility, though, is where Tzvi Pesach Frank raises here, is that maybe that's not considered Hanah, as we discussed a second ago. Meaning, because this is only something which you're viewing and not something that you're actually partaking of in a very physical, tangible way, so then maybe where Tzvi Pesach Frank writes, maybe that's considered a kol and mare is not something that's a problem in terms of Hanah. However, Tzvi Pesach Frank points to an amazing raya, amazing proof. He says that if you look, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The fifth paragraph on page number 2. The Yesh Lazer Raya Mefureshes Shari the Mishnah Arucha. It's a Mishnah which says the Nachri Shehidlik Ner B'Shabbos L'Tzorach Yisrael Aser Yisrael L'Shtamish La'Oros. So let's say a non-Jew lights a candle for you. You can't use that candle on Shabbos. You can't use that candle on Shabbos, right? That's considered Hana. That's considered Hana from a Malacha of a Nachri done on Shabbos. What are you using the candle for? To warm up, right? So what if you're using the candle to read something else? What does that sound like? Mare, right? Seeing.
That's tangible.
Why is tangible?
Because now you can see something that you couldn't.
You see the TV also that was off before. But vision is not considered a hana. Just viewing something. You know what the shayla comes up? I don't know if I mentioned this last week. The shayla comes up. You're not allowed to gain benefit hana from dead bodies. From dead bodies. It's supposed to be buried and you're not supposed to gain a benefit from them. Can you go to the body museum? I don't know if they have it here, but they have it in New York, a body museum where you can kind of study anatomy by going and viewing. Or a doctor has to learn a trade and has to do anatomical research. Might be different, obviously, because you have to learn for protecting people. But let's say it's just for fun. You want to go to the museum just to learn about the anatomy, and they have real, I think they have real dead bodies that people are viewing. Is that a problem? Okay, so it is. So everyone have a wonderful day. And there are tshuva svarim which address this question. And one of the things they deal with is this question: is viewing the body considered hana or not? Vision. And this is the source they go to. Vision, kol v'marareach, is no me'ila. It's not considered hana. It's not considered benefit. So what about here? So, but look at this. But you are right in the following sense. Again, if you're reading inside, so that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has a Yerushalmi. Uv Yerushalmi, it's in Sukkah, it's in Shabbos, it's in Psachim. And then what? In Sukkah again? Oh no, sorry. It's in Sukkah, and it's quoted by Tosas in Shabbos, Tosas in Psachim, Tosas in Sukkah. That Isala Hedja, Delishtamish Laura Nair, what are you using the candle for? Nichla Bukhlal Kol Marvareyach. That is considered part of Kol Marvareyach. Umilashuadin Kain, Linin Kol, the Kol Marabiyach and Nishna Bibi Madrasha. And then the Rispesa Frank is basically, he's Masupuk about this, but he's raising both sides basically. Some of the postkim apply it directly. Others are makel on this. Rav Asher Weiss, I was told, was makel on this. Rav Chaim Kanievsky, I read in a journal once, a newsletter they send out from Bnei Brak. I saw that he was makel about this, that he said, nah, if the TV was turned on or the radio was turned on, if the malacha was done, it's not a good thing. But benefiting from that malacha is not considered benefiting because it's just viewing, it's just watching. You know where else this comes up? Sometimes they videotape. In particular, I'm thinking of one instance when the people go to Uman for Rosh Hashanah. So you have Jews, non-Jews, I'm not sure, who are videotaping the davening on Rosh Hashanah. So doing that malacha on Yontif, on Shabbos, on Yontif, and then we're going to want to view it after Shabbos to see what kind of interesting things they do in Uman on Rosh Hashanah. So...
what if you viewed the footage from security camera?
Yeah.
Shabbos,
right.
But it was running during Shabbos.
Right. Assuming it was exactly. Assuming it was done on Shabbos. Right. Running 24/7 might be a little different.
Would
right.
Make a difference if it's running 24/7 versus somebody.
Yeah. That could make a big difference. So Tzvi Pesach Frank talks about that in the power station case. Maybe there's nothing that's done on Shabbos. Sometimes there's kibui, not. It's complicated, but it could happen. The case that I remember, we if anyone here knows about the Smichas Chaver program, we have it in on the other side. I gave it in the Kolel. David's a proud member? He's a member. One year we learned Hilchos Shabbos. So we spoke about these halachos a little bit back then. And I remember in the group of the Magide Shir who are giving the Shirim. So we have, you know, if you have a question or a thought or a comment or whatever. So Rabbi Ari Leibowitz wrote to the group that he said the most American application of this is the case. Actually, I was on the other coast. It was applicable there. It's less applicable here. But the following case, I grew up a Yankee fan. So when you listen to the radio, we used to have salad announcers. Then Susan Waldman took over. Personally, I never appreciated her very much. But I did grow up listening to the radio, the games. We had a TV, but we never had a cable. So in the early years, I forget already which channel it was, but I basically was only able to ever watch Bill Nye the Science Guy. I don't know if that means anything to anyone here. Otherwise, I could watch the Yankee games. I forgot it was Channel 2 episode. I forgot which channel it was. But eventually, it switched to Yes Network. And my parents never got cable until much later, so we weren't able to watch. So I grew up listening on the radio to Yankee games. And the following question is interesting. Let's say they were playing a game against the Los Angeles team. Dodgers. Or Anaheim Angels. So it's Shabbos in L.A., and they're broadcasting a game to New York. It's Matzei Shabbos for me. And who's doing the broadcast? Susan Waldman. Waldman is a nice Jewish name, no? So the yeshivish argument, my argument is that's not called Hana, listening to her call a game. That's not called Hana. But the other question you have to deal with is now you have a case of a woman who's a Mumer L'Chal Shabbos. Maybe she's a Tinuk Shanish, but she probably wasn't raised, I don't know. I don't know her story. She probably wasn't raised with any knowledge of Yiddishkeit. But so maybe she's a real Tinuk Shanish, but maybe that matters, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it's only an Isser Derabanan to talk over a radio. If it's only an Isser Derabanan, maybe we could be Makel on a case of Shogig, if it's a Shogig. Or maybe there's other kulas to be had. Maybe just listening, just hearing is not considered Hana. And if it's not considered Hana, then maybe you're allowed to be Makel in the first place on the whole question, because you're not really taking any tangible benefit from it. So even if you happen to enjoy that type of broadcast, so maybe there'll be room to make one in such a case. Okay, like I said in the beginning, we're not here to pass in shadows. We're here to talk about some of the background of the issues, some of the svaras of the issues, which I think are very fascinating. Rav Tzipi Pesach Frank talked about everything we just did. This was the least inside of the text we've done yet, but everything I said was really inside these two tshuvas, and there's more to be had. There's interesting things about the generators, the power stations in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Tzipi Pesach has a tshuva, I think it's Kuf Pei Aleph, in between these two, about using a refrigerator on Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael. So you're using electricity, but you're not doing anything active with the electricity. You're just maintaining, you're preserving the state of the food and not letting it spoil. Is that considered hana for Maisa Shabbos? He argues that might not be considered benefit. No, that's fine. But I'm saying the electric is not actually, it's not creating anything. It's just maintaining, preserving the food.
It's the same thing with turning the light on.
Maybe. But that's, but that changes from being able to read to from not being able to read. Here, it's just the same. The food stays the same. So he talks about that as well. Okay, a lot of interesting things to talk about. Comes up all the time. We don't have time to get into it all now. The Siyat Shemaya Belina will pick up in 2 weeks. I don't know, maybe at some point we'll get into Purim topics. I don't know what there is, but we'll check it out. Okay, everyone have a wonderful day.